friends. You heard the subject. Our two wars. But before I get into that subject, let me tell you about another war. A little boy went to religion class. And when he came home, his mother said to him, "What did you learn today at Sunday school?" He said, "I learned about the war of Moses and the Egyptians." "Well, what happened?" "Well," he said, "the Egyptians," he said, "were pursuing Moses and the Israelites. So Moses telephoned to his engineers. His engineers laid pontoon bridges all across the Red Sea. When the bridges were laid, the aircraft saw the tanks of the Egyptians coming on the other side of the Red Sea. Moses telephoned the airfield, radioed the jets to bomb all of these tanks and the army, which they did. Then when the Israelites were across, then they bombed the pontoon bridges, and Moses and the army were safe." Mother said, is that what they told you in Sunday school?" "No," he said, "it isn't. But," he says, "if I told you what they really said, you wouldn't have believed me." Well, our country is something that's very dear to your heart and to mine. I wonder if it's dear enough. No, the Greeks had the virtue of pietas, which was love of country. And love of country was one of three forms of love. One was love of God, and the other was love of neighbor, and the other was love of country. Have you ever noticed that all three pass out together? And there's no longer respect for parents, and no longer a sense of divine relationship to a Heavenly Father. There's no more patriotism. And because the country means so much to us, as Lincoln said, "We've been blessed as no other country in the history of the world has ever been blessed," it makes one feel rather tragic that we are in two wars. One of the wars that we're in is what might be called the protracted war. The other war we are in is the insurgent war. The protracted war is one that we fight outside our country. The insurgent war is the one that is fought inside. The reason I mentioned both at the beginning is because I gave you the title of two wars. I'm going to leave it for a minute. I will come back to it. But I want to tell you about a very false concept of war that we still have in the United States. The concept of war that we have now is what might be called the theory of the intermittent war. This is a 19th century inheritance. One might almost say it is something that has been inherited from the centuries. But our philosophy of war at the present time is that war is not constant. That war is something that disturbs relatively long periods of peace. Secondly, our false theory of war is that every war must end in victory. Because we have the theory of intermittent war, if you pick up an American history, you will find, for example, our history in terms of a war, say Civil War, World War I, with the dates after it, say World War I, 1914, 1918, and so forth, World War II, and any other war that we happen to be in. You see, it's intermittent. It is not a continuous thing. Now, I wish to suggest to you, for a better understanding of our country, that this theory of an intermittent war can cause us a great deal of trouble. We must understand what is new in the world. And what is new is something that was introduced in 1917 for the Communist Revolution. The Communist Revolution introduced into the world the notion. Did you ever figure out how my angel always... I never tell my angel when to clean the blackboard. Ever notice that? He always knows when to clean it, and if I don't want it cleaned, see, he doesn't clean it. Now, sometimes I'll walk away, and he doesn't clean the blackboard. Not because I walk away. Funny, isn't it? Well, the Soviets have introduced into the world what is known as the protracted war. What does the protracted war mean? It means that war is continuous, not intermittent. Do they wage it? No. The Soviets and the communists in general have two zones. One is called the peace zone, and the other is called the war zone. What is the peace zone? The peace zone is Russia. Russia has not been in a war since 1917. It's gobbled up other nations, but first it signed a treaty of peace. Russia is the peace zone. Russia will not go to war with any other nation until the last war, when they will be victorious. Where's the war zone? All of the non-communist countries, which America's one. Russia will not send men to a war zone. They'll send planes, tanks, equipment, and all forms of military hardware. But Russia keeps peace at home. And if it fights elsewhere, where we might become involved, it does so by proxy. Who are the proxies? Any of the communist duped countries that will fight because Russia wants them to fight. Now, how about the rest of the world, the non-communist world? This non-communist world is the war zone. Here, the war must be continuous. They do not want peace. They cry peace at home. But wars must be incited elsewhere. So just imagine a number of dominoes put upright, one after the other, on end. The Russian theory of war is to get any non-communist nation battling one of their dukes or battling any other non-communist nation so that one domino knocks over another domino until all of them are prostrate, and then Russia is ready to come in for the kill. Is this exaggerated? I will give you testimony in a moment. Let me develop a little bit further. See, the great advantage of them keeping this peace zone and not fighting outside of Russia is that they make every non-communist nation that appears, that engages in war, they make them appear as if they were disturbing the peace. And there are many advantages to this peace zone inciting war in the war zones. First of all, there's an economic advantage to Russia. The nation that is warring gets in debt. There's a political advantage to communism in inciting wars in other nations, such as our own. It disturbs the unity of the people. There is a psychological advantage. The psychological advantage is that they convince the other nations of the world that the one people that is disturbing the peace of the world is, for example, America. And finally, there is a religious advantage to keeping the non-communist nations at war. And the religious advantage is that there will be some in the era of religion who will identify religion with politics and nothing else. So you add this up. Does Russia want peace?
Yes.
At home. Outside of Russia, what does it want? War. Does it want us to be at war? It does. Does it want us to stop fighting? I'm speaking of the inner core of Russia. No. Would it ever want us or any other non-communist country to have a victory? No. Is this my imagination? Now let us see. I am here quoting a testimony of Stalin. So you may say, all right, Stalin is passé. I will talk about that in a minute. But Stalin is quoting Lenin. Here is the exact words. We cannot forget the saying of Lenin that a great deal depends upon Russia delaying wars with the capitalist countries. Delaying wars with the capitalist countries. This war is inevitable. We must wait until revolutions ripen throughout the world. Therefore, the maintenance of peaceful relations with capitalist countries is now obligatory for us. The our only war we will fight will be the last war. That is Stalin quoting Lenin. May I interrupt this very serious telecast to tell you about a story about Stalin. Remember when Khrushchev came in power And he wanted to de-Stalinize, and he dug up the body of poor Stalin, remember? And Khrushchev was carrying around Stalin's body on his back, you know, finding a place to bury it. Couldn't be too public. Couldn't have a veneration of Stalin. So he called up Ben-Gurion in Israel. He says, Ben-Gurion, listen, I've got this body of Stalin dragging it around. I can't bury it anyplace. Let me come down to see you. So Khrushchev went down to Israel to see Ben-Gurion. And he begged Ben-Gurion if he couldn't bury Stalin in Israel. Ben-Gurion agreed. They signed a treaty. And Khrushchev was happy when he got on the plane to go back to Russia. But just as he was leaving Ben-Gurion, Ben-Gurion says to Khrushchev, he says, Khrushchev, I want you to know that Israel has the highest resurrection rate in the world. Now, suppose we go to the other part of the world with its philosophy, Mao. Mao has revived the writings of Sun Tzu. Sun Tzu wrote on the strategy of war 500 years before Christ. And I am quoting from one of the works of Sun Tzu. To fight and conquer in your battles is not supreme excellence. Supreme excellence consists in breaking the enemy's resistance without fighting. You see how contrary this is to our idea of victory? To fight and to conquer is not supreme excellence. We just weaken. Now let me give you Mao himself. While the enemy is strong, avoid decisive battles. Never fight any in the early stages of war. Gradually weaken the fighting spirit. And Mao gave a little parable. And this is it exactly. I'm not reading it, but I know it by heart. He tells the parable of the princes of the iron fan and the monkey. Now, a prince with an iron fan could very well fend off a monkey. But he said the monkey conquered the princes of the iron fan by turning himself into a little insect and then getting inside of the princess until she was infected with a germ and she died. So, Russia talks peace. But my fellow citizens, may I say to you, we must be careful. Russia does not want peace. It would be very happy if we stayed in war until we were completely weakened. Then comes the last battle. That's one of the wars we're in. And we've completely forgotten our communist philosophy. And the judgment that I'm making is based upon that, not based upon politics. Now we have another war. The other war is the war at home. It's the insurgent war. What's the insurgent war? The insurgent war is the war that comes from from a breakdown of law and authority. Insurgent wars come from a revolution of protest, of being against something without being for anything. Robert H. Sangster has written very well of this insurgent war. And he tells how revolutions and disturbances of the country's peace take place. And they do it in three ways. First of all, those groups or leaders that would disturb our country and start an insurgent war, first of all, have a number of Minutemen. That is to say, they are those who can be called out very quickly for any kind of protest. All they have to do is call up a few colleges and a few other groups, and sure, they'll protest. They don't know what they're protesting against, but they're protesting. Those are the Minutemen, ready to run. Next comes the followers. The hangers-on, better. Hangers-on are the people see the placards and they say, yes, this is right, and hear the shouting, and so the crowd is swelled. This is not dangerous. But down at the bottom, the hardcore. And in a group of 50,000, how many would belong to this hardcore? 200. And they'll be equipped with electronic loudspeakers. They're the ones you have to watch. So our country is in danger on the outside. It's in danger on the inside. We're living in days of violence, but the wrong kind of violence. The good Lord said, I came not to bring peace, but the sword, violence. Not the violence that hacks off the ear of the servant of a high priest like Peter. He proved himself a good fisherman because that was all he could do, was hack an ear when he wished to cut a neck. And our Lord says, put that sword back. The other sword is the sword that runs inward to self, cutting out some of this egotism and this pride and this violence and this want of respect for law in our country. That's the kind of violence we need. And if we do not restore it, what are our chances of continuing? Well, here's a great American, George Kennan. Listen to what he says. You ask me, as an historian, let us say, whether a country in the state this country is in today, with no highly developed sense of national purpose, with the overwhelming accent on life of personal comfort and amusement, with the dearth of public services and the surfeit of privately sold gadgetry, if you ask me whether such a country has, over the long run, a chance of competing with a purposeful, serious, disciplined society such as that of Soviet Russia, I must answer, no. What are we going to do about it? Are our judges going to be so weak they will release every criminal? Are we going to allow hangers-on, minutemen, to determine our policy and to be led by a group that is interested only in the overthrow of American society, such as the French government was overthrown in 1789, though there's no comparison as regards the value of the governments. But, as Lincoln said, God meant this country for serious purposes. Let us, in the name of God, rediscover those purposes.